Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Catherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back to the Family Express podcast. This is a different podcast today. We don't have a guest speaker. It is Catherine and I sharing time together and reflecting on the life and legacy of Sue Johnson. So it's just us talking about the impact she's had on us and grief and loss, and just a bit of a moment for us to slow down and actually just grieve together.
And to be with all of you out there. And for those of you who didn't know Sue, Dr. Susan Johnson was a psychologist, a British woman who then moved to Canada, so a Canadian psychologist. And she is the originator of emotionally focused therapy, which has at this point now about 40 years of research and has become the main way to work with couples in the world of psychology. And it's a big deal because up until Sue came along and did her dissertation and her doctorate focusing on how to help couples, there really wasn't a model that was working well for couples therapy. So if you think about all the couples, whatever kind of couple you are, around the world today, I think we all have a hope because we now know, because of Sue, how to define love and how to actually work on that in a therapeutic context. And not even necessarily in therapy, but she is the author of so many different books that these books are available in many different countries and many languages. And so her impact has really touched the world and touched the world in an important way because many of us find ourselves in romantic adult relationships. And so her work directly impacts us in our homes, in our families, in our primary attachments. Rhonda, it's really been a week. She died unexpectedly a week ago. I really did not see that coming whatsoever. And so many of us, of course, have been in shock.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems like the shock comes and then sadness comes and then shock comes and sadness comes and also like waves of numbness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I can totally relate to that. I'm sure like a lot of the rest of the world, I was surprised and shocked. And I let out an oh my G-O-D. I just waver back between like dropping into sadness and grieving her life, grieving her leadership. And then I kind of roll into numbness. And then I find myself all of a sudden having another thought, you know, later of like, I just can't believe it. And it really does feel that way. It really does feel like my brain just cannot believe that this is true. And then later on, I'll just feel sad and I'll be like, oh, I'm missing Sue. I'm just dropping into missing Sue and missing her being, I don't know, the leader of us, the heart of us. I'm not quite sure. It's been a short week.
Thank you so much for sharing. I love hearing when you say, I just miss Sue. I just miss her. I miss Sue. I have found myself having so many regrets and wanting to rewrite life in many ways and thinking this week, why can't some people just live forever? It's just certain people in the world, like Nelson Mandela and then Sue Johnson. And surely these people who leave such an impact and legacy should be able to just keep going.
Keep going.
So there's been that regret. And then I've just been thinking, how does she die a couple weeks before the very big emotionally focused therapy summit, which is like 4 or 5 weeks out? Mm-hmm. Like, how did this happen right now? We haven't seen her in many years because of COVID. And why couldn't it just have been like 4 to 6 weeks later if this had to happen at all? And then I found myself just reflecting on the grieving journey and realizing, okay, grief is happening because I have moments of numbness and shock, moments of eating too much sugar and just wanting to lie in bed all day sleeping. And then moments of regret and wanting to go back and rewrite things. And then moments of feeling the sadness and the pain, and the waves just come, like you said.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. It's been a strange week. Yeah.
As I've been trying to like digest and metabolize the news, when I'm in moments of numbness, I find myself thinking, you know what am I grieving about? It's not like I really knew her all that well. And then as you said, hey, let's spend some time grieving together and doing this podcast, I found myself thinking, but I don't have anything to say.
Mm.
And then I think of our community around the world of EFTers, and many of us were very lucky to have known her. Many of us were lucky to have learned from her, actually met her in person. And then many of us never did actually see her in person, but have maybe sat witness to her trainings or virtual trainings, thank goodness, or maybe not at all, right? Maybe only being exposed to her writings or her teachings, even through other people. And so I've been really just trying to digest and think, like, who is Sue to me? And why do I feel such sadness when I didn't have all that much time with her? And yet the moments that I did have were special. And I'd love to share why.
But yeah.
I think what opened it up for me is I started reflecting on what was my life like professionally and personally. Before I knew her. And so I went back to being in graduate school in the early 2000s, and really wanting a model of theory that I could stand on. Okay, I was trained in a lot of different things. Interestingly enough, not EFT. EFT was not presented in my graduate marriage and family degree. And so I remember my internship for 2 years, just struggling as a newbie therapist. And I actually got to a place where I was thinking, I don't know what therapy is, and I don't know that therapy works. And that's a very sad place to come to when you've studied a master's degree for many years, that I was taught how to think and taught how to see systemically, but I didn't really know exactly how to do therapy in the room. And I just remember floundering, and I went to training after conference after conference after training on different models of therapy. And then finally in 2004, actually a friend said to me, have you ever heard of EFT? You should go check this out. And that's when I got to go to a 4-day externship with Dr. Sue Johnson. And that, honestly, it sounds like a cliche now, but it really changed my life. Because when I sat in the training, what she was talking about resonated so deeply inside of me. I was like, oh my gosh, I finally have a way to see the world, see relationships that make sense, that feels right in my body. And now I'm going to apply it to my life and see if the theory still fits. And suddenly it was like, bam, 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 bam. Everything fell in place. And I suddenly like understood the psychology of me. And because it actually made sense organizationally, cognitively for me, then I started weeping. And I spent time in the training just weeping, because I now, things made sense. And it felt like such a relief that maybe my career was not, I didn't have to change careers. But also that there was a model that helped me feel my feelings and understand, you know, my woundings and my current relationship. And so alongside the grief, it also gave me just a tremendous hope. And honestly, from the time that I had that feeling, that experience in the externship, I hit the ground running. I'm like, I now have an understanding of relationships, of what to do when they're not working, of how to do the work. And I just hit the ground running. I'm learning how to apply that to families, to individuals, and to couples. That's kind of a long story. Sorry, Rhonda. But I was just realizing, okay, so who is Sue to me? She's still here. Her impact is in my life. She's gone now, but she's still here. She's here every single day in my office when I turn and do the work that I do. Every time I write a note and I conceptualize the things the way I do. And then I realize, what's her impact in my life? Wow. I might not have been a therapist if I hadn't discovered the work that she did, the theory she formulated.
Right. That's incredible. I mean, to kind of hear that you were maybe on the brink itself with with therapy.
And I was fed up. I'm not going to do something that doesn't work. I'm not going to waste people's time or my time.
Yeah. And I think for me, when I hear you talk about Sue's impact on you, you know, it feels very similar to me. As soon as I discovered EFT, like I was in, right? Like I wanted in. I wanted to stay. don't kick me out.
Can you say why? Like, what happened for you?
I think for the same reason that you're saying is it made a lot of sense for me personally, and I could see it applied to honestly my relationship with my parents, and so it just started to like line things up for me relationally. It made a whole lot of sense for me of why I do what I do. And there was I have a real love for women leaders. I have a real love for women who are leading and I don't know. I just felt a real connection to Sue. And it's a really weird grief thing because, you know, she didn't know me. I never got to meet her. I never saw her in person. I came on during COVID. My externship was the first externship during COVID on Zoom. And so it's this very weird thing for me to have such an affinity and an affection for someone who doesn't know me in return, who doesn't have memories with me.
So
to me, it's like it was only half realized, right? Like I was actually looking forward to meeting her. You know, I had kind of imagined the day where I would get to meet her in person. And so you take all these things together, like the personal impact on my life, my love for female leaders. I've had some really amazing women leaders in my life, some great bosses, and great female supervisors. To see Sue create this amazing EFT, and I mean, I think she took it as big as you could take it. I think she just, you know, this amazing power and the foundation that she had. And then all of that sounds really good and feels really great to me. And then the grief part is how strange it is, because I have to also grieve the hopes and dreams I had for myself and my relationship with Sue.
Right.
I had envisioned meeting her. I had envisioned her one day saying my name, right? Like in her British way. And so
she might not have said Rhonda, but she would have called you, "Hey, sweetie."
See, that's what I've been saying.
Everybody's sweetie. It was so, so sweet. And it's like when she said it, she was in the moment, right? You felt her presence. It's like, how could people who even did just meet her for a few minutes feel so connected to her? How could one person connect with people across the world who she met occasionally and some she didn't even meet? Because she was so there, so authentic. And when she did see you, it mattered to her. I think that's how I've been trying to understand, like, how did she have this impact? I'm sorry that you don't get to hear her say, "Hey, sweetie."
Yeah, I've been seeing that. It's interesting. I've been seeing that on Facebook posts, and it's like, that just sounds amazing. And so I think some of the work I've done in the last few days was kind of grieve that little piece of her, you know, one day I'll meet her, right? I grieve that.
Yeah.
One day I'll shake her hand, I grieve that. One day she might say my name, I'll grieve that. Mm-hmm. And then when someone posted this story about, hey, sweetie, I was like, okay, I think I'm gonna hang on to that. I think I'm gonna kind of substitute or replace this grief of the loss of what I have of that part of that side of the relationship, and just kind of like take in Sue's voice saying, hey, sweetie. And that's interesting because I kind of did that shift over the weekend of grieving the others and then taking on, well, I don't ever remember her saying that, but everyone mm-hmm. says this was so common that this was Sue. You mm-hmm. said, hey, sweetie. So I think I just kind of tried to take that in and just kind of carry that with me.
Rhonda, oh, so many things. I love what you're saying. So you're doing such an important part of the grief work, which is not just what have we lost in the past up until this point, but what are all the experiences we lose out on now in the future? So I love that you're, putting a name to that sort of space. Mm-hmm. And then as you were talking about internalizing her voice for you, because mm-hmm. you know she would have wanted to know you.
Oh.
She had a deep affection for her community around the world. And she just couldn't travel everywhere that she wanted to. I remember inviting her to go to Uganda last summer. And she was so keen. She was so keen to like get to Africa. She would have loved, she said actually going on a safari was like her bucket list. And I was like, please come. We'll take such good care of you. But couldn't get to all these places she would have liked to have. But I really do believe that if she had met any of her EFT people throughout the world, she would have been like that, you know? And so what I love about what you're doing, though, is you're taking her legacy and you're doing EFIT on you.
Yes.
She freaking loved EFIT, emotionally focused individual therapy. This was really like her legacy in the last couple months. Was developing EFIT, writing the beautiful book that she did, training online so much with Leanne. Like she put a lot of her academic energy into pushing EFIT out there into the world.
Yeah.
So the idea of you being able to say, she's here with me and she's saying, hi, sweetie. Mm. Wow, that's Sue. That's Sue. That is Sue showing up, right? Like she's here with us.
Yeah.
We know her even though we didn't know her. Yeah,
exactly. It's a grief of a relationship. I've never experienced this kind of grief where it is the person has not known me but I've known them.
Fascinating. That is different.
So fascinating.
Yeah.
And yeah. I try to you can only try to explain grief so much, right? Explaining is such a cognitive action, but.
Yeah, look
at my husband and I'm like, I throw my hands in the air and I'm shaking my head back and forth. And I'm like, this is so strange.
And so good to wrestle with that, though, because you didn't meet her in person, but her impact on your life is everywhere, right?
Yeah.
It's in the work you did on your childhood when you put this model to your experiences. It's in my marriage. Like she lives in my family and the things I do with my children. She's in my office every day, every time I open my mouth and have a therapy session.
Yeah.
So as you were reflecting here, I think I had a little aha.
Ooh, yeah.
So I was talking about how coming out of being a student and then being an intern brand new to the therapy world and feeling like so lost, and I didn't have a model and I didn't know what I was doing. And then I was reflecting on, hold on, Sue had the same moment. Okay, but she handled her moment very differently. And that's why she was that she was. Okay. Like Sue talks, she tells these stories and she's a wonderful storyteller, we know, but she told these stories about how she was a doctorate student. And for some reason, I wish I could have asked her, I hope someone knows. Like, why did she decide to study couples therapy? Was she thrown into that? Did she choose that? I actually don't know that. I want to find that out. So anyway, for whatever reason, she's a doctorate student in Canada and she's got to study, she's got to work with couples, and she wants to help couples. And she tells the story of going into the library, going into the depths of the library and looking on the shelf, right? You want to walk in there and just find a book that's going to teach you about couples therapy. And how aghast she was. This, I think this was like in 78 or something. There just weren't books. I believe there was one book by Neil Jacobson. There wasn't any way for her to turn. Of course, she read Neil Jacobson's work, and the idea of couples therapy at the time was that it was about communication, and it was a quid pro quo. It was like, you do this and then I'll do this, kind of like a bargaining, kind of like a business relationship. And we're very clear in our roles. And then, you know, we make sure that we do equal amounts of different things. Mm-hmm. And somehow, as she was sitting with couples, that just didn't work for her. Right. So here she is having the same experience. What is therapy? Yeah. How does it work? Right. But I want to leave the profession. And she was like, I don't know what she was thinking, but she figured it out. Like, she hung it out. Somehow, she found an intuition. She started learning how to focus on feelings. And then she started listening so deeply to what people were asking. And then she started hearing that what they really were asking for was attachment. Do you care about me? Have you got my back? Can I lean on you? Do you support me? Can we trust each other? Can we be there for each other? Right? Do you see me? Do you hear me? Do I matter to you? So she somehow, as she stayed with them emotionally, she heard these attachment pieces. And that's when, then she tells this other story about being in Britain in a pub. And she's talking to a dissertation chair, and they're kind of having an argument about, you know, how to do couples work. And then in the argument, she gets questioned and she says, it's not a bargain. This is not about bargaining. These are not business relationships. And the person says, well, what is it? And she says, it's a bond. It's a bond. And in that moment, John Bowlby's work floods in, and she suddenly sees kind of the overlay and what relationships are about, and that people are wanting love and passion and these attachment things. And that's when she starts applying attachment theory to working with couples relationships. But look at her, right? Like, what did we see there? I feel like she was a woman of grit.
Absolutely.
She was tenacious. She was a leader. She led us. She figured it out. She found the answers and put it into a beautiful model. And you know what? She did it until the day she died. She worked her fingers to the bone. She worked. The stuff fascinated her. She worked until the day she died. That's courage. That's boldness. That's strength, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she just saw a question, saw a gap.
Yeah.
Just wanted to not just fill the gap, but understand and organize.
I was trying to think of, like, for people who haven't known, or like my kids or people I want to, you know, tell about her and her impact. I was like, how do you describe her? You know, even if you haven't known her that well, it's like, would you tell me what you think of these? But I would say, like, she 100% a lifelong learner.
Oh, for sure.
She was a truth seeker. Like, she loved the field of education and psychology and academics and research. And I think she put that stuff above, like, trying to make money or becoming the, you know, the most biggest person in the world. It's like, she just followed the science.
Yeah.
She followed the work. And then it sort of mushroomed from there, right? The impact of the work.
Definitely a lifelong learner. Absolutely. Yeah.
And then I was thinking that, you know, we're talking about her being so sweet and present, but she's also a very genuine person. I mean, she had a strong personality, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Sue was direct. And to be very honest, when I did have the opportunity of knowing her a bit, and at the beginning of starting to know her, pretty different personality to me. And she was just very direct. Like, what you saw is what you got. Like, she just said things the way they were.
Yeah. And
I just wasn't quite used to that. Well, right. I think what happened is that I'd seen her in all these videos, and in the videos, it's everything soft and sweet.
Yeah. 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 So
I was like, oh, well, Sue's just this little sweetie. But then when I saw her personality and how charismatic, but also direct and genuine she was, yeah. I was like, okay, wow, hold on a second.
Yeah, different parts of self, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that was one of the things that also made me feel very comfortable with EFT, you know, Sue being the face of EFT, you know, back when I, you know, in COVID, when I was found it, when I discovered it for myself, was, you know, I would see her in the actual sessions and the video sessions. And I saw her do the EFIT training with Leanne. And I saw the interactions. And I remember feeling very comforted that you could be a therapist who could show up different ways.
Right.
That is like really how I am.
you especially are, right?
Especially.
You have a big personality, my friend.
I have a big personality.
And I really hate it when you dumb yourself down.
I know you
do. I really don't like it. It's like, what happened?
What happened? Where did she go?
Good.
It's just, I know big personalities are a lot. And so it was reaffirming to me that it is possible to be a therapist.
Yeah.
And have a big personality and have different parts of myself. And to me, she made that okay. And I said, well, if Sue can do it, maybe I can too.
Wow. That's really nice to hear. And I love that you saw both sides of her and you accepted that and that was inspirational for you, because she really was human. She was human. On the one hand, I think she had a humility about her. And on the other hand, I think she had blind spots. She was human. Sure.
Like we all do. We all have our blocks, right? And getting the courage to give other people permission to show you your own blocks.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you feel like you're such a humble person, when she came from very humble, difficult beginnings, to realize as a humble person that you actually have a lot of power, mm-hmm. even though you're a female leader, and she had a lot of challenges at the start of her career, like she really had to be courageous to stay on the path and make the path that she had. Mm-hmm. But to go through that and to realize, and I still have a lot of power and I have to address this in my community and in the world. Mm-hmm. That's a lot to realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think it's important that we all acknowledge the identities and parts of us that have power and those that feel under, where we have the privilege and the power, and then where we don't. We can have our own. It is possible for us to not see ourselves accurately. And I think surrounding yourself by people who are willing to help you see yourself accurately and still accept you. They're going to help you grow, but they're also going to accept you, right? And I just keep going back to the dialectical tension of when we're accepted, then we can grow. And that is like a constant motto for me in my life, is like, when I am accepted, then I can grow.
Yeah.
It's really hard for the acceptance, and it's hard to grow. Like, so I just remember seeing Sue and being like, yeah, that she just seemed to be a mirror to me. And I was like, if she can do it, I can do it. And we all still need our help growing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think this organization she created around the world just got so very, very big. Mm-hmm. And with so many different layers, right? With the board and the trainers and supervisors and the therapists and all the people whose lives she impacted. And then I saw ICEF just go through iterations of health and dysfunction and health and dysfunction and growth and
protection and
protection. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the different layers trying to give reflective messages to the others. Like, here's what you need to see. Here's how you're coming across. And there have been times we've been open to that and times we haven't been open to that.
Yeah.
But I like
that. Honestly, all this process oriented work that we do as individuals and in relation, dyad relationships, and even in big organizations and big systems like ICEF. Honestly, I just think we owe all the thanks to her for giving us a way to organize it and to see it, you know?
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. And in many ways, the way I see it is, well, I get to be on the trainer level, and what I experienced is that she created this organization, and in some ways there's a lot of freedom and sort of not that much control, and we're allowed as an organization to be creative and to go out and do things and make podcasts and talk about things and publish our own books and like apply the model in any way that we want it to our professional and personal lives. And so on the one hand, there's a lot of freedom and creativity that's come because, you know, the type of organization she created. And then in some ways, there wasn't enough structure to keep people safe and to put processes and operations in place that would have made it a bit, maybe, you know, a bit more streamlined.
Sure. Yeah.
But I really like what you're saying, Rhonda, that she has given us a model of how to do relationship, and we get to do that with each other through all these aches and pains, which I suppose to a degree are just normal in any organization, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Seems pretty normal to me. You know, anytime I get into a group, an organization, I just see a lot of similar patterns, you know? And so to me, I just see it through that lens of, you know, rupture and repair and leaning in, and what happens when we lean in, and there's going to be these growing aches and pains. And to me, it makes a lot of sense. And that's why I stay, right? Because it makes sense to me.
And we get to be in the trenches doing life together with people, you know, who have similar values and outlooks. And I have found myself partly wanting to get ahead of myself and think, oh my gosh, what does this mean? What does this mean for our next few years? And then on the other hand, just trying to slow down and realize, hold on, keep Sue inside me, keep her with me, try to understand and feel into her impact on my life so I can hold on to this. And also what's unique about this grieving experience, because I've been through a lot of grief, is that there's so many people and we're all grieving together. And it's so much nicer to grieve when people actually know what you're going through. Mm-hmm. You have a name to put to it. Everyone feels the same way. Everyone's feeling it at the same time. And even across time zones, I've been able to speak to people in Australia, in South Africa, in Egypt, in Europe. Like, there's always someone available to talk to. And it makes a grieving journey so completely different when you're surrounded by loved ones. And I guess I just want to encourage people to do what Bowlby and then Sue told us to do, like reach out and talk about it and share and spend time thinking about, what does this mean for you? How has she impacted your life?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you named that piece about not getting ahead of ourselves, right? There's lots of questions that we may have, but for right now, I'm just kind of reflecting on her impact on me. And like you said, reaching out, I've reached out to a certain few individuals, and I've had a certain few individuals reach out to me. And so if we just kind of just keep doing that, if we all reach out to a few and it's going to go around, we're just going to keep passing the compassion and the love that we have for each other. And I don't know, reaching out seems to be the key.
Let's keep doing that. We're all feeling it together, and we're thinking of you across the world as we grieve the loss of our magnificent, magnificent leader.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as everyone has been saying, our beloved Sue. So, well, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Catherine, for sharing this space with me. I appreciate you. I appreciate Sue.
I appreciate you too.
All right. So this was an unusual one. This was a kind of a stop and a pause for us to honor Sue. And our next episodes, I imagine we will be back to having our guest speakers as usual. So stay tuned.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.